Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to The Ruck. I'm Owen Slott and you join us following a fascinating weekend of rugby. Fiji won the Hong Kong Sevens. Exeter all but secured a home semi-final. Saracens safely out of that hell of Europe got back to winning ways, men and women, that is both smashing their opposition. But we on The Ruck see a world beyond the winners and trophies in this episode. We launch a search for something rarely seen in the game this year, this season even. The soul of Harlequins. Vanished, departed, disparu, like a truant schoolboy, it lies in hiding somewhere. Quins have been flat out poor, but home humiliation by London Irish on Saturday was the final confirmation. Any listeners in the Twickenham area? If you've seen the lost soul of Harlequins, please email us on The Ruck. Tom, do you know where it has gone?
I think it's somewhere inside their new stadium. They seem to be focused on the wrong things at the moment, seem to be completely void of ideas, low in confidence, and something clearly needs to change.
Thank you. That was Tom Hamilton, towering sports writer of ESPN. Tom is now such an all-rounder, he'll cover the Winter Olympics one week, Anthony Joshua the next. But the opportunity to see his beloved Bath being flattened by Leicester always draws him back. Jonesy, also known as Stephen Jones of the Sunday Times, is also with us as ever. Jonesy, all well?
Yeah, very good, Slotty. Welcome back, mate. It's nice to see you.
Jones, you're at Twickenham on Saturday. If 10 out of 10 is the ultimate of crises, how high are Bath creeping up on that rating at the moment?
Fairly disastrous for Bath, Owen. I think the minimum for them was top four. They're nothing remotely near that. I know they've had bad luck with props. I think there's six injured, and that really takes a toll. But they'd look a little bewildered, a little unhappy. They don't look together to me. They make bizarre signings and then they make bizarre ejections, premature ejections in the case of Matt Banahan. And it looks completely wrong to me, I'm sorry to say.
Thank you, Steve, for that positive note. With a whooping and a hollering, we have a new guest to introduce today. Chris Jones of The Standard, one of our most senior and respected citizens. You're right with that, Chris?
I'll take that.
Okay. Tell our listeners, how long have you been a rugby writer?
Well, I reported from my pushchair some years ago. I'm now in my 38th year of covering rugby, so I think I do get some kind of award for that.
Great to have you here. In 38 years, best player you've seen?
Michael Jones of New Zealand.
Very good. Just
close behind Richard Hill. Like Richard, not the scrum half from Bath.
Thanks,
although he's it's the other one. No one ever noticed.
Jack, there's no need to be highly controversial in your first appearance.
I thought I'd get a Kiwi in there because I know you have this deep love of anything to do with New Zealand. So I thought I'd throw that in there.
We're only in the third minute of this podcast. We don't need any of that. Chris, where were you at the weekend?
I was at Worcester having my eardrums burst by their vociferous fans, particularly the one who sits right in front of the press box, to see them discover a player, which I know Steve will know all about. He's obviously one of our cousins, Dorian Jones, who joined from the Dragons and transformed Worcester in the second half against Newcastle. And they were thoroughly deserved winners, but without him on the pitch, they were a bit rudderless. So well done, Dragons. You've lost another good un.
Dorian Jones, good spot. Moments of brilliance, shafts of sunlight we want to shine on the weekend. Tom, Jonesy?
From Twickenham, from a Bath point of view, very few. Callum Afoni was probably the standout player there. There was also this clip doing the rounds on social media of Nolly Waterman putting in the most astonishing try-saving tackle you've ever seen.
I saw that.
It was remarkable. A player streaked away, clearly going to score under the post, and out of nowhere came Nolly Waterman to tackle. It was quite something.
Daniel Waterman is a kind of Queen Midas of rugby. Everything she touches turns to gold. That tackle-back try, the tackle-back she made, was sensational because it looked originally like she was just going to run back for the conversion. The tackle was sensational. Next day, according to social media, she went to one of her old clubs and there were 400 girls there to play rugby. Do you know what? Some of these girls don't get the publicity. That is a 24-carat superstar, Daniel Waterman, and there are others too. But, Slotty, before you ask, my most delightful moments. I went to Exeter Chiefs last week to interview Johnny Hill, who was a lovely lad. Yesterday I watched him, as did you. You were there, you wrote a nice big report. In the world of bashing up front, it's always lovely when someone does something that's delightfully skillful. And I thought Jack Noel yesterday was absolutely wonderful. He's clever, he's a talisman, they use him properly. And I just think Jack Noel is something really special.
He's a treat when he comes back, isn't he? He was on the bench because he's come back from injury, brought on after 15 minutes, much earlier than they would have wanted, and didn't take him any time at all.
Eddie Jones was saying during the Six Nations that he sees him potentially outside centre, almost like England's Conrad Smith was a comparison. Thoughts around that? Do you reckon he could?
I can see that they want to get him involved in the game, but I actually think that when you're outside centre, Tom, I think that you're then, that's your position, that's where you are. Whereas the way that Exeter use him, he comes in from all over the place, pops up everywhere. He even goes in for the forward drive now and again. I mean, I think sometimes when you've got a great player, you don't telegraph him. I think I'd leave him where he is. And actually, just one more point, the Exeter pack is absolutely amazingly young. That pack could still be together, every one of them, in 5 years' time, and that's frightening for the other teams.
Yeah, they just dispirited Gloucester within about a quarter of the game. Gloucester were just looking down at their shoes and thinking we ain't going anywhere here.
I'd really love to think that Gloucester have really advanced on last year, but actually I struggle to find out where they have advanced with respect to them.
Just going on for the Exeter theme, I think, you know, England should be thinking of starting maybe half the Exeter pack in South Africa. And talking about South Africa, I saw my highlights, thanks to the powers of online. I saw Dan Goggins' try for Munster. If you haven't seen it, look for Rory Scannell's inside pass. It is a stunning try. And if England can go down to South Africa and produce stuff like that, as Munster did, then they'll have a great tour. But it's not looking great at the moment. I don't know about you guys, but I am not very hopeful for England going to South Africa because they've got to leave behind a number of key guys. Otherwise, they will be dead in the legs heading into World Cup year.
Listen, we've been miserable about England for the last 3 months or so. England, we don't have miserable to have another day of that.
Come on,
we're going to be miserable about some clubs instead. Okay, well, we'll do England misery in a minute.
Right.
Jonesy, great Hong Kong sevens.
Yes, it was.
Fiji won their fourth on the trot, beating Kenya in the final. But for many, Papua New Guinea were the team that turned heads?
They were superb. I mean, I think we all probably watched it, but Papua New Guinea are an amazingly fervent rugby nation, and they've qualified for the World Cup of Sevens. And when you've got players like Isaac Akila and Samuel Malamali, it's just absolutely brilliant, absolutely brilliant. A real big feature of the week going.
Fantastic. Chris, any other Papua New Guinea players that particularly caught your eye?
Not many roll off the tongue, a bit like some of their opponents. I would say that Kenya are the one team you should be worried about going to the Rugby World Cup.
I'm just asking you about the Papua New Guinea players.
Unlike Steve, I'm not obsessed about Papua New Guinea. I'm more interested in the wonderful performance of the Kenyan sevens team. And forget about the long distance running. These guys over short distances are absolutely fantastic. They've got a couple of finals. They are going to be really, really up for it when it comes to San Francisco in July when the Rugby World Cup sevens is being staged.
Very good. Mentioned Emil Ratamaluli of Papua, but obviously you weren't watching.
Well done, Chris.
You're supposed to do your research before.
Thank you for that. Room. Actually, is anyone in this podcast due to attend the World Cup of Sevens in San Francisco in July?
I think we're all available.
Well, I'd love to. I mean, that's quite a trip.
It's in the Bay Area as well, so it's not just San Francisco. So you can get in touch with your sort of lighter side and also enjoy the fantastic panoramic sights of the bridge.
If World Rugby wanted to sponsor a podcast out there, then we could probably manage.
It's a shame where, you know, everything clashes. I always say that to listeners, readers, or every meet people, if you only ever do one thing, go to Hong Kong Sevens. And I'd say that about the World Sevens as well. That's two things, admittedly. But it's a shame that we never have a great Sevens tournament over here. But I don't think that our authorities are really like Sevens. So it's a shame. It'll always be abroad. But as you say, we are available.
Okay. Right. Let's return to the subject at the heart of today's podcast, the malaise, if that's the right word, at the heart of some of England's clubs. Three leading English clubs have really struggled this season: Quins, Bath and Saints.
Oh, let me hit you with the stats. Since the turn of the year, Bath are 3 wins and 4 defeats. Northampton are 2 wins and 6 defeats. It's all in the Premiership. And Quins are 1 win and 6 defeats. You know, those last two, Northampton and Quins, have been absolutely dreadful. I've seen quite a bit of Northampton. Their only performance of any shape or form was the one over Claremont. But the rest of the Premiership has been dreadful. They played okay up at Newcastle at St James's Park because they had Myler back at 10. And you know what? He actually gave them a little bit of shape. They actually knew what they were doing. But I don't think they've got any idea what they want to do with Piers Francis, nor Harry Malander. They are a shambles behind the pack. The pack is no longer going to scare you. You know, they covered over the cracks by giving Picamole a huge load of money and made him fit, and then he went back to France. But that papered over the cracks.
So just go across the panel. If you were a player at one of those clubs, or if you could get out of one of those clubs, which one would you want to leave the quickest, or which has the greatest problem?
I'll be out of Northampton myself.
You'd leave Northampton?
I actually think Northampton are probably best placed out of the three, looking towards next season. With Boyd and Boyd coming in, and bigger, the recruitment there seems to be perhaps on track path-wise.
So what you're saying is Saints have started to deal with the problem. Haven't solved it yet, but they've addressed it.
Yeah, Chris Boyd's already having a role there. He's visited once, and he's visiting again at the end of the month. He
has to make sure he realised how bad it was the first time.
But they're already looking to got Sam Vesti coming in, who's a very promising attack coach. I think he's widely regarded as being highly rated, someone who's clearly thinking ahead. They got rid of the last remnants really of the Malander reign with Dorian West. I'm not sure what's happened to Alan Dickens if he's staying, but they're certainly looking ahead. The recruitment's going right. Dan Bigger is strong. They brought in Ben Franks as well. And then Chris Boyd's very highly regarded. They were without a number of first team players at the weekend, but something's definitely not been right there all season. And I think the same goes for Bath as well. Bath against Leicester. Bath looked completely void of ideas, had no semblance of a game plan. Exits were non-existent. Set piece crumbled. And their recruitment's been scattergun all season. They seem to have no coherent thoughts or long-term plans there whatsoever. And it's all very well and good being able to put on an occasion like the Clash, which was a great occasion, great fun to be there. But equally, if you've got an unsuccessful team, then that should really be your priority.
Jonesy, who do you think has the biggest problems at the moment?
That's a very good question. I think that... Bath and Northampton they just need a new direction, massive new direction. And it depends who the direction comes in from. But I think Harlequins probably, because they seem to be slipping down. They don't seem to have correctly rebuilt the team. I mean, the time when it was Brown, Kerr, Easter, something worked. But I think since that split up, it's not working at all. And some of the signings are odd. And, you know, if John Kingston's really got to crack the whip, or he must know that, he's got to get results. He must get results. They cannot finish like they're going at the moment. I think that probably Northampton have the base there. They have the fans, have a great ground. They made a profit 15 years in succession, etc. Finally, I'd say that they've been a victim a little bit of England's awful selection. To bring over Piers Francis sight unseen was ludicrous, and for him to be in the England squad ahead of Danny Cipriani, frankly, I found insulting. Also, Paul Hill, England tried him for ages, and now he's not even starting for Northampton, so that doesn't help. But three great clubs, three great followings, and really we need them all to revive.
Yeah, we sort of get to the question which dogged a bit of the early part of the season, which is, if you're a club in trouble, how do you address it, or at what stage do you get to the ultimate point and have to sack your coach, which is not the traditional rugby way. Rugby tends to switch and change up at the end of season if necessary. It's more of a football thing, but it's, as we've seen in the last three or four seasons, it crept far more into rugby. one of the people I think I admire slightly for the way he addressed it is Mark Darbin, the new chief executive of Northampton. He comes in and he starts the start of this season. He's presented immediately with a crisis, and he could sit there and do nothing. But actually, by Christmas, he'd sacked his coach. And by the end of January, I think he'd found a very able replacement for next season. So then you can look at the other clubs. So are they correct to be sitting on their hands waiting for the people they've backed to come good? Or should they be reaching for the trigger? I mean, I think Quinns are at that point, but...
The rugby answer to Sam Allardyce is to go to New Zealand and get a coach, isn't it? So Bath did that. They got a Blackadder. We're still waiting for the cunning plan because it ain't working under the current owner, is it? He's not very happy, and Bath not playing the way they should be playing. And as Steve said, let someone like Matt Banahan go. You're letting people who are at the core of the club, who understand what the club should be about and can get it back to that position. If you're going to get rid of them, then OK, replace it with something equally as important to the fans as well as the squad. And they're not doing that.
More on Matt Banahan. I think letting Banahan go... He is the man that the club is all about. You know, he's the long lifer. He's been there. He still contributes so much. And when you let people like that go, then you really are losing your core.
Or when people are saying at Bath, and people high up, you know, are saying that they've lost the link. You know, you've always got to have the link with the old people, even if it's at Northampton with Piggy Powell as groundsman or whatever. You've got to have the link with your own culture. Now, that maybe comes from the coach. If the coach is not from your own culture, you've got to find someone who is. You can just divorce yourself from all the great things that put you where you were. And incidentally, as far as the media, often we're responsible for driving this thing about he's got to go, he's got to go. There's this very funny ad for one of the online betting companies on TV where you see this football coach blathering at his team and suddenly he falls through a trapdoor and another person pops up during the game sort of thing, which just sends it up. So... The only thing is, you've got to be careful what you wish for. I understand what you're saying about the chief executive, but actually, Jim Mallinder, has anyone who's come in since been any better? Alan Gaffney, certainly not. So sometimes, you learn where you went wrong and you deserve a chance to put it right. So it's a very, very difficult question.
I think the dynamic at Harlequins is very, very different, and they've created this situation where Nick Evans, Nick Easter, Adam Jones... You know, I've just gone, straight from the changing room into the coach's room, which is always very difficult to do. And I think they could do with someone coming in under Kingston to take over the actual running of the club, day to day, as in the coaching. Let JK go and do all the contracts
but
and things.
Kingston came up through the club as well, or had been there for ages. So your point is, where are new ideas going to come from?
I don't think they've got a head coach at the moment who can either. Tell the three recent guys, OK, Roundtree's there doing the forwards. Graham is never going to be a leader, is he? He's not a number one. So you need a number one. I don't think JK at the moment can give the answers they need or bring in that freshness, which is desperately needed, just to sort of galvanise everybody.
I think at Bath, the problem there also is they've only got sort of... I mean, when Taboy Matson left at the start of the season, they brought Stuart Hooper into the coaching team. You've got four coaches there. You haven't got an attack coach, which was clearly evident on Saturday, the Leicester performance. They need some fresh ideas there, whether it's a new attack coach, whether Todd perhaps gets fed up and decides to go back to New Zealand. We'll wait and see, but it's Bath certainly needs to have some sort of new thought there.
Do they have an attack coach lined up, do you know?
Not that I'm aware at the moment. I think they were looking at someone earlier in the season, which didn't happen, but... It was a case that they wanted to settle with what they had with Darren Edwards, Toby Booth and Blackadder. Mm. And then Hooper was brought in, I think, I guess, unless Stuart has a previous life as a winger or an inside centre, then he'll be working on line-outs. So they certainly need some new thoughts.
Bath have an infamously impatient chief executive, owner rather, in Bruce Craig, who's... When he's not happy, he'll switch it up quicker than anyone else, so history would tell us. At some point, Bruce has got to address the situation that he's created himself, as in replacing and replacing. So it's almost harder for him, because if he was now to replace the coach that he only put in place 2 years ago, then he has to look at himself in the mirror and ask what...
Of course he does. And, this be fair, the owners have saved professional rugby in England, club and international, because there was no plans for professional rugby. Bruce Craig, an unbelievably generous guy. But in every big club... We have to know who is the big man at this club. Exeter, there is no doubt, it's Rob Baxter. But the way that his other two coaches are totally on the wavelength. I spoke to Rob Hunter and Ali Heifer last week, and after 5 minutes, they completely lost me because they were way above my knowledge of rugby. They were absolutely mesmeric. But Baxter is the number one at Bath. Who is the number one there? Is it Bruce Craig, and is he calling the rugby shots? Is it low-profile Todd Blackadder? All the best clubs have one big, tough semi-bully with media nous and with technical nous and forceful, and then you know who's in charge. And I think that Northampton and Bath and Harlequins, we're not absolutely sure who is calling the shots.
Blackadder's, Tom, would you he's a phenomenally decent guy, isn't he? Yeah. Is he too nice?
I don't think so. I think this season, I think he used to work really well with Tabo Matson when they were there. They sort of did the good cop, bad cop sort of thing really well. And I think Todd's had to do both this season. He has lost his rag a few times, seemingly. He's a fine coach. He's coached some of the world's best players. But the team on Saturday, there's so many injuries there. That's not the team which he'd want to pick for a game like that. I mean, you're without probably 10 first-team players there. You're losing. Lions are injured. You've got other players. You've got Dave Atwood, who's been fantastic. He's over at Toulon, which is, I mean, that's enough for a whole podcast in itself, but he's exactly what they need at the moment, Atwood. It's given them some stopping power, given them some go forward the whole lot, because they simply have not got anyone to get over the game line as things stand. And Bath's best player, apart from the formidable Benno Obano, is probably Alan Brew at the weekend, because he was the only one carrying forward. But Obano was the mini superstar.
It's the fifth anniversary of me exposing Dave Atwood's cause. He's been cruelly underdone, underused. I know he's had terrible injuries, but I still reckon he could win 50 caps.
Do we think Atwood might tour with England? Can he tour with England if he's with Toulon?
Well, and the exceptional circumstance rules still in place.
No, but he's still a Bath player. He's only Toulon on loan. He will be at Bath next season.
And the exceptional circumstance in all this is the fact that he's playing probably the form lock of England. That guarantees you nothing under Eddie, because he's got his set views. But just watching him yesterday against Racing when Toulon threw away the chance to win, he was absolutely brilliant, including an interception. It's just unbelievable.
The average rate of gain of the English driving maul is about minus 5 yards per game. And it's about time they had a real lock in there. And I mean a real lock. Not someone who says, oh, great, he's made 56 tackles. Because in the modern era, tackles mean nothing. Tackle count means nothing because people run straight at you. It's a double tackle and they gave that tackle to two players. It's ridiculous. Tackle counts are easy. Being an international lock is difficult. And he's got the physique for it. And I think he's got the psyche for it. And it's scandalous that he had to go to France to prove it.
But of all the tours you want to take someone like Atwood on, a trip to South Africa is exactly his sort of tour. Because they're going to be waiting for England with a couple of kitchen sinks to hit you with. And you need a guy who's going to take it and give it back. And the way he's going at the moment is fantastic.
Isn't the reason that he went to Toulon, though, because Bath had got to the top of their salary cap and couldn't afford to keep him for the rest of the season? I mean, it strikes me as a poor decision that he would be the one you would lose, but he has been injured for a long time, so maybe they couldn't justifiably have faith that he would be able to deliver.
Well, I hope that's true, because it means that people are listening to adhering to the salary cap. So I hope that's a true story.
So do
true,
I. Because
so do you, because you've just written it.
Yeah, well, I haven't written it yet, but it'd be nice to think we deal in true stories on the ruck.
But if it is true, that's just another example of how messed up Bath are. How can you get yourself into that position? I mean, we all know, there are some strange calculators that work for English rugby's salary cap, but to lose a player like that just because you've got your sums wrong is absolutely scandalous.
I'll just make a positive point about Bath. I think Obano is going to become a really good player. I thought he was stunning around the field on Saturday. His scrummaging appears to be improving. And I would categorically place him ahead of Ellis Genge in terms of contention for England.
OK, good. Let's move on to that. So amongst the highlights and strong players of the weekend were these wannabe England loose heads. So, Jones, you mentioned Benno Obano, who was outstanding. Ellis Genge got a lot of rave reviews from that same game. And in the game I went to on Sunday, Alec Hepburn, the Chiefs loose head, was deservedly man of the match, scored one try, created another, and very, very good in the scrum. Ahead of those two on the England pecking order, you've got Joe Marler and Maka Vunipola. Is this the point where that pecking order gets mixed up?
Well, it should get mixed up purely by the fact that Mako needs about 2 months lying on a sun lounger somewhere doing nothing.
We all did that.
I know. It's just to ask him to go to South Africa when you've got, as you listed, all those loose head options. It'd be madness to take him. Give him a break, for goodness sake. Okay, at least they're taking time with Billy coming back rather than rushing
Mako.
Him.
If you rest Mako, then do any of the other three start to nudge ahead of Joe Marler?
I think with Marler.
When he was coming through the ranks at Harlequins, he sometimes got the balance wrong between being that sort of abrasive, in-your-face character and a bit punchy, going over the line, which is what happened to Ellis Genge on Saturday when he was penalised by Wayne Barnes for a bit too much frivolity after that. Winning a scrum penalty, but I think we need to see a bit more of that bite back in Marler, like the sort of get his strut back, for want of a better way of saying it, because he's a fine player. He can be formidable. He's the sort of person you imagine propping against a tight head. If Marler starts getting in your grill, you're going to start getting frustrated by him and making silly mistakes. So I think Marler, we need to see that fire back in Marler. But as things stand, I think Hepburn's probably the outstanding loose head.
If Mako doesn't start against South Africa, Jonesy, who would you have there?
I think if Mako doesn't go, I think they've got to take Marler. But do we actually know? I'm asking this as an innocent question. Is Eddie intended to take his full team, or is he not? So do we actually officially know that?
We actually officially know nothing that goes on in Eddie's head. We just guess at it a lot.
Well, I think the inference is, though, Steve, that they won't be going with all of them.
He did say that it was possible that he would rest people, so he's opened up all possibilities.
What you don't want to do is make the little losing streak into a longer streak. I mean, I think that if I was them, I'd take everybody and maybe give Mako the whole tour off and bring him back for the third test match. But if Mako van der Poel doesn't go, I think Joe Marler almost got to go in terms of experience. But I would absolutely love to see anyone of Abano, either Abano or Hepburn, get stuck in there and give it a go, throw them in. But with Marler as a backup to come on and sort it out as Jason used to.
What's not mentioning Genge there?
I don't think he's as good as the other two. I really don't. And, he's clearly fiery, etc., but I don't think he's as good as the other two.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Away from the struggling three giants, there's a pretty interesting battle for the playoffs going on higher up the table. Exeter and Saracens pretty much confirmed. Well, Exeter are confirmed semi-finalists. Saracens almost there. Then you have Leicester and Wasps on 56 points, Newcastle on 54, Sale on 53 and Gloucester on 51. So that's five clubs separated by 5 points battling for two positions, three games a season to go. A very exciting denouement to the Premiership season. How do we see this one panning out?
The four you've got there will stay. They're looking at their fixtures.
You think Leicester and Wasps will
I think Leicester and Wasps are still in. Just looking at their fixtures, you know, Leicester have got Northampton, Newcastle and Sale, where you'll be looking at the way they're going at the moment. Yeah, we'll take that. Wasps, they're struggling with numbers just to get the first team out. They've got Worcester, Northampton and Newcastle. And, you know, okay, Newcastle away, that could be the key one. But, you know, Wasps are so dangerous. I know it's the other thing, if you score, you know, three tries, we'll score four. And at some point, you know, the numbers might catch up with them. But I think Newcastle, I saw them on Saturday. I think they've hit a bit of a wall. I think their players are feeling it, what they've done, which has been fantastic this season. They also have a semi-final against Gloucester in the Challenge Cup to put up with. I think they might just be a gallop short of where they need to be. I don't know what the guys think.
Well, I think you're right. I think Dean Richards was quoted as saying, look, the boys are tired. I think that it's going to be real difficult because Newcastle got to go away to Leicester, which is an 8-point game. And I don't think they can probably win there because I don't think they got the legs left. And if I were them, I'd concentrate on keeping in the top six, doing my best to get into the Challenge Cup final and resting on my laurels because they've been absolutely brilliant. I think Wasps had a horrendous result with that late try by Marlon Yard against Sale. I think that probably wrote off their chances of getting in a home tie. And I think you're right, Owen. It's very exciting and great to see Sale surging, coming up to the top. We desperately need them to do that. But I think now that Newcastle are going to be the team of that five to miss out.
Newcastle maybe paying for their success in Europe then? I mean, they played the weekend before when the other clubs were resting. Everyone plays this coming weekend, but then Newcastle and Gloucester have to go again in their semi-final. So
it's going to be interesting to see how they balance the squads. When you look at the sort of the injury toll, I mean, Wasps, they're struggling in the pack, aren't they, for fitness? But then even in the closing stages of the game against Sale, they managed to bring on with 5 minutes left. They brought on Simpson, Juan de Jong, and Guy Armitage, that's not bad for three
that's
replacements.
Decent, isn't it?
Yeah, you've got Juan Young, who's a Springbok. Simpson, who's got 800 Premiership appearances, and Guy Armitage, who's pretty handy. So I think when you look at the balance of the squads, I think Sale are interestingly poised. They've got this guy, John O'Ross, who played against Wasps on Friday, was absolutely sensational. The back row got Tom and Ben Curry coming back. Ross Harrison's playing really, really well. Marlon Yard is playing well. They might just be sort of peaking at the right sort of time. AJ McGinty as well, who's a busy fly half, he was playing really well. But
isn't their heartbeat that Fafter Klerk at nine? I mean, he seems to me to be one of the players of the Premiership this season. Every game
he'll be the Bok nine in the Test series.
The Bok nine in the series.
Well, my spies in South Africa said that Fafter Klerk will be the Bok nine in the Test series.
Well, they're talking about bringing them back. Good spies. They're bringing the European guys back for the tour, which would be amazing because you've seen how many are in form and guys who come to Wasps and also Faf at Sale. They've just picked up their game. I thought Juan was a busted flush when he came over, but he's and Woolley at the back there has done really, really well this season. You know, it's just there's been some great performances by the South Africans, also in France as well, hasn't they? They've been really ripping it up.
Will the French South Africans get back in time because their season goes on to a week into June, doesn't it?
There's enough of them so if they don't make the semis and final, the others will play.
Yeah, they must be praying that Montpellier don't make the final.
That's right, because there's half their team there. Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so some predictions. So, Chris, you said you expect out of those five, Leicester and Wasps to stay in the top four for the semi-finals.
I don't see Newcastle and Sale getting up there, just because one Sale, I don't think they've got the nous to get up. They make too many mistakes, particularly away from home. And Newcastle, I just think that the legs just haven't got it, which is a great shame. They've been really, really good.
Tom Jonesy, anyone care to disagree?
No, I don't disagree. I think Exeter and Saracens will be in the final. That's got a few steps down the line. And what a final that will be, because Saracens have obviously now got their players back and coming strong. But it's been an excellent season. And to have Newcastle and Sale at fifth and sixth, if that's how it works, is brilliant. Brilliant for the league.
And next season, we know who's coming up next season. Bristol, a cheaper promotion from the Championship at the weekend, beat Nottingham by a lot. They scored 60 odd points. What do we think of Bristol? They came up season before last and went straight back down again. This time they spent a lot more money. Obviously got a different director of rugby in Pat Lamb. The ins and outs are far more numerous. And Steve Lansdowne, their owner, as I say, is invested a lot more in the playing group. Is this a team now that can stay in the Premiership next season?
Not yet, because, I mean, look, the last time Bristol went up under Andy Robinson, we'll have to wait for the history books to be written, because I've never worked out. They do have a very, very generous and moneyed benefactor, and for some reason they left the team as it was, and they struggled. And suddenly, when they're detached at the bottom, they're suddenly desperately trying to bring players in to save them. Bristol are probably my favourite rugby club. I think at heart they're one of the biggest clubs in England. It's certainly one of the biggest rugby cities. They've got one of my all-time heroes, Pat Lamb, in charge, but they cannot do it without buying more players. We know they've got Charles Piatow. They've got John Afoa, who's decent, but possibly no longer anything more than a holding operation. And they need players in there, even though they've got a very good team. And it is kindergarten stuff to believe that you can just add two and then the rest is the 13 other ones that brought you up. We're sorry about that, but that's what it is.
Let's just go through. So, as you say, they've got Piatau and Afoa coming in. They've got Luatu are already there and Madigan are already there, who are two international quality players, or both have played a lot of international rugby. I'm largely agreeing with you, Steve, because I was expecting more names to come in. I don't know if that's because salary cap, they're getting quite high already, because if you are a new club coming up, then you have to play over the odds to get players to join you. That's the way it goes. So recruitment's hard in that respect. Who else have they got coming in? They've got Harry Thacker, a hooker who can't get a game for Leicester. They've got the scrum half Sturzacker from
Scherzinger.
Jan Thomas from Gloucester. I mean, these are not guys who are going to, you know, there's bums on seats are not going to be. Steve Maffey's been mentioned from Castillo. But do you know what? As Dave Dent was saying on the weekend, you know, they played London Irish a couple of weeks ago. He said that was such a hard game. He said there is nothing in this Premiership which can be called an easy game. If Bristol come up with the squad they've got at the moment, even with Charles Piatau, who we know can change matches, they're not going to be above bottom place at this rate. They need some serious, serious money spent on very good players, because this Premiership is unforgiving.
I think it's power in the pack that they might end up short on their locks. One of their new players is Muldoni from Connaught, who I understand is very highly rated. Can't say I've seen a ton of him, but...
you saw Haskell on the market.
You still got Haskell on the market.
You engaged Haskell.
Are we announcing that on the Ruck?
No. I think you'll find that in Hello. But if you want to announce it on the here as well, I'm sure.
Well, we do have a court on social section.
Well, you know, it's a
social. We could start.
Chloe and James.
Yeah, we're in Paris together and walking down the street, and the romantic Haskell knelt down on the pavement, which is slightly odd. The future Mrs. Haskell said, but then he produced a lovely ring.
Which he didn't drop,
yeah. And and then she accepted. Thank God, it would have been a bit embarrassing.
A bit of a downer, wouldn't it? The rest of the holiday
he
went downhill
down
quickly.
The ring.
Is that a true story?
It's a true story.
Because we deal in true stories here, as we've already discussed. Another true story.
How true can it get?
I was there. He took my advice. I said, you've got to get
Did he
ring.
Ask you to be there as a witness?
Yeah, I was a witness. I was over the street in the restaurant. And... It was. Board. I have to say, it was very, very moving. Honestly, it was very moving. I had to loan him £23,000 to buy the ring, but it was very moving.
And then they went on to England. Went on to lose to France, or was it after?
No, that was It was recently. It was recently.
Very recent.
And actually, I hope the lad. I think he's a great lad, a great player. I hope he gets a club. And hope he and Chloe have a long and happy life together, because he's a really good lad.
The way things are going, Chloe's got more chance of being signed by one of the Premiership clubs at the moment, isn't he?
I tell you what, if I was Bristol, I'd have him, and if I was, and maybe make him captain, I'd make him captain in Northampton, and I'd make him captain in Bath. So there's three.
Can we just go back to the romance side? Todd, you love that story, don't you? Come on, we don't talk about love enough on the Ruck.
No, anyone in a new relationship at the moment should be listening to these stories.
Yeah, anyone in a new relationship, that's not you, Chris.
No. So it's about timing, really, Tom.
It's not me.
Yeah, how you take this forward. Yeah?
Well, seriously.
Well, I'm feeling thoroughly moved to tears.
Just moving on to
Hask.
Well, Haskell, Gloucester have been the latest team to say we're not going to sign him. Ackerman...
That must have been a great relief to him.
And Ackerman made the point that the reason is we're hanging on till we can talk to all these Super Rugby players.
And also my son's in that position.
Yeah, which is what Diane probably said as well.
Slight drawback for that, but it is remarkable that Hask, who can offer an awful lot to a club, has not been snapped up already. I just don't understand it.
Come on, so do we want Bristol to sign him up then? Bristol is Jonesy's favourite club.
They could do a lot worse than getting someone like Haskell, who will make it very clear to those guys coming up who haven't played in the Premiership before exactly what is going to be required.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, some of the people we've just named who are going to Bristol are finishers or people who come on for the last 10 minutes. Hask can go on for the first 50 minutes and have a massive influence because of all of his experience.
on that note, I would like to say thank you very much for listening. This is the end of the ruck. We're looking for the soul of Harlequins. We are looking for a club for Haskell. And we are looking forward next weekend to the second leg of the semi-finals of the Women's Tyrrells Premier. Harlequins nose ahead of Wasps in the first leg over the weekend, and Saracens very, very convincing against Gloucester Hartbury. We haven't talked about that much because we're going to do an entire ruck special on the women's game next week. Two editions next week, your regular one and a women's rugby special. Please join us then. Thank you very much.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.